Bhagavad Gita, as it is, chapter 18, the perfection of yoga, text 77, page 862. Chanting together. Tachchasam smrityasam smritya rupamatyad bhutam hare vishmayo me mahan rajan rishyami chapuna punaha. Translation. O King, as I remember the wonderful form of Lord Krishna, I am struck with wonder more and more, and I rejoice again and again. Text 78. Yatra yogeshvara krishno yatra parto dhanurdharaha tatra shri vijayo bhutir dhruvanitir matir mama. Translation. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. That's the last verse of Bhagavad Gita. So we'll start over again. Chapter 1, text 1. Page 35.
Dhritarashtra vacha dharma kshetre kuru kshetre samaveta yuyutsavaha mamaka pandavaschaiva kimakurvata sanjaya.
Translation. Dhritarashtra said, O Sanjaya, after my sons and the sons of Pandu assembled in the place of pilgrimage at Kurukshetra, desiring to fight, what did they do?
Text 2. Sanjaya uvacha drishtva tu pandavanekam vyudham duryodhanastara acharyam upasangamya raja vachanam abravit.
Translation. Sanjaya said, O King, after looking over the army arranged in military formation by the sons of Pandu, King Duryodhana went to his teacher and spoke the following words.
Text 3. Pasyaitam Pandu putranam acharya mahatim chamum vyudham drupada putrena tavashishena dhimata.
Translation. O my teacher, behold the great army of the sons of Pandu, so expertly arranged by your intelligent disciple, the son of Drupada.
Text 4. Atrashura maheshvasa bhimarjuna samayudhi yuyodhano viratascha drupadascha maharataha.
Translation. Here in this army are many heroic bowmen, equal in fighting to Bhima and Arjuna, great fighters like Yuyudhana, Virata, and Drupada.
Text 5. Drishtaketus Chekitana, Kashirajas Chaviryavan, Purujit Kunti Bojascha, Shaibyascha Narapungavaha.
Translation. There are also great, heroic, powerful fighters like Drishtaketu, Chekitana, Kashiraj, Purujit, Kuntibhoja, and Shaibya.
Text 6. Yudhamanyuscha vikranta uttamojascha viryavan sobhadro draupadeyascha sarva eva maharataha.
Translation. There are the mighty Yudhamanyu, the very powerful Uttamoja, the son of Subhadra, and the sons of Draupadi. All of these warriors are great chariot fighters. And finally, text 7.
Asmakam tu vishishaita tanibodha dvijottama Nayaka mama sainyasya samgyartam tan bravimite.
Translation. But for your information, O best of the brahmanas, let me tell you about the captains who are especially qualified to lead my military force. And finally, text 8.
Bhavan bhishmascha karnascha kripascha smitim yajayah ashvatama vikarnascha saumadattistutaivacha.
Translation. There are personalities like you, Bhishma, Karna, Kripa, Ashvatthama, Vikarna, and the son of Somadatta called Bhurishrava, who are always victorious in battle. So we're going back to chapter 18, text 77, page 862. So Sanjaya is speaking. He's speaking to Dhritarashtra. O King, as I remember the wonderful form of Lord Krishna, I am struck with wonder more and more, and I rejoice again and again. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It appears that Sanjaya also, by the grace of Vyasa, could see the universal form of Krishna exhibited to Arjuna. It is, of course, said that Lord Krishna had never exhibited such a form before. It was exhibited to Arjuna only. Yet some great devotees could also see the universal form of Krishna when it was shown to Arjuna, and Vyasa was one of them. He is one of the great devotees of the Lord, and he is considered to be a powerful incarnation of Krishna. Vyasa disclosed this to his disciple Sanjaya, who remembered that wonderful form of Krishna exhibited to Arjuna and enjoyed it repeatedly. So there are different types of incarnations, and one type of incarnation is Shaktyavesh avatar, whereby a living entity, Jiva soul, is empowered by the Lord so much that he acts as an incarnation. In other words, he's completely empowered to act as the Lord acts. Just like, for example, there are disasters, and in some emergency the police may deputize an ordinary citizen. He says, okay, here's your badge, you're a deputy now. And the person is not an official member of the police force, but for the particular circumstance he's empowered to act. And then whatever he says is backed up. He's authorized by the police force, by the government. In a similar way, the jiva, sometimes, there may be some special souls that the Lord empowers, so much so that they can act as good as God. And Vyasadeva is one of these powerful incarnations of the Lord. He was empowered. Vyasa means one who arranges or compiles. He compiles all the Vedas. And he had many disciples, Paila Rishi, so many others. He was teaching the Vedas. But he left them all aside, and he instructed the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially to Shukadeva Goswami, because Shukadeva Goswami was completely free from any material desires. And as the Bhagavatam begins, it is meant for such persons. Therefore, Shukadeva Goswami was the suitable person the suitable recipient for hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Vyasadeva is one of the great devotees. He's so exalted that the offering of respect to the spiritual master on the appearance day of that particular spiritual master is called Vyas Puja, because although that person may be acting as a spiritual master and may be respected as such, should be respected as such by his disciples, still the respect is given ultimately to Vyasadeva, because he's the original guru. He gave all the Vedic knowledge. Whatever any guru speaks is coming from what Srila Vyasadeva has presented in the Vedas. Therefore, they give respect, Vyas Puja. Text 78, the last text of Bhagavad Gita. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. Purport. The Bhagavad Gita began with an inquiry of Dhritarashtra's. He was hopeful of the victory of his sons, assisted by great warriors like Bhishma, Drona, and Karna. He was hopeful that the victory would be on his side. But after describing the scene on the battlefield, Sanjaya told the king, "You are thinking of victory, but my opinion is that where Krishna and Arjuna are present, there will be all good fortune." He directly confirmed that Dhritarashtra could not expect victory for his side. Victory was certain for the side of Arjuna because Krishna was there. Krishna's acceptance of the post of charioteer for Arjuna was an exhibition of another opulence. Who can say which opulence that might be? Renunciation, yes. Krishna is full of all opulences, and renunciation is one of them. There are many instances of such renunciation, for Krishna is also the master of renunciation. The fight was actually between Duryodhana and Yudhishthir. Arjuna was fighting on behalf of his elder brother Yudhishthir, because Krishna and Arjuna were on the side of Yudhishthir. Yudhishthir's victory was certain. The battle was to decide who would rule the world, and Sanjaya predicted that the power would be transferred to Yudhishthir. It is also predicted here that Yudhishthir, after gaining victory in this battle, would flourish more and more, because not only was he righteous and pious, but he was also a strict moralist. He never spoke a lie during his life. There are many less intelligent persons who take Bhagavad Gita to be a discussion of topics between two friends on a battlefield. But such a book cannot be scripture. Some may protest that Krishna incited Arjuna to fight, which is immoral. But the reality of the situation is clearly stated. Bhagavad Gita is the supreme instruction in morality. It's the supreme instruction because it's being given by the Supreme Personality. The Supreme Person is obviously decides what morality is. How can anyone else decide what morality is if there's someone superior? He makes the rules. He says what is good and what is bad. And what is good is what is pleasing to Krishna, or what he says. That's right. Might makes right. So he's the mightiest, and therefore he's right. It's true. Might makes right. Just like in the newspapers, everyone knows that if you're in a particular country, they slant the news in favor of their particular country that they're in. It's like if you speak to a person from another country about the same event, they have a whole different idea whose fault it was, how it started, how the war started, who was right, who was wrong. So whoever has the power writes the, they say, whoever wins writes the history books. And they write the history books in their favor. Now, you can also say that applies to Krishna because he always wins and he always writes the history books. And he's the mightiest and he's the rightiest. And therefore he's the supreme morality. And some people just don't like that. That why should just because he's so mighty he be the, why should he use his position to incite Arjuna to do the wrong thing? This is what they say. Arjuna was a nice, non-violent man. He wanted to go and sit in the forest. Wouldn't that have been nice? He could have avoided the whole battle of Kurukshetra. So many people could have been saved. It's a good argument. If Krishna had let Arjuna go, then that would have been it. There would have been no fight, because without Arjuna, it wouldn't have been possible. Then certainly Yudhishthira wouldn't have fought. He would have accepted, yes, my brother's right. He was already inclined to give in. He was not very much inclined for fighting. Of course, Bhima may have fought. It's unlikely that Bhima would have. Of course, we cannot speculate. But the point is, someone may say that if Arjuna had just not fought, then so many people's lives could have been saved. And Krishna incited him to commit so much violence, where are all the devotees? Where are they? Oh. So, but the ultimate morality is in the hands of Krishna. And not only because he's the supreme, but if you analyze it, you'll also see that he really is the supreme moral person, the supreme fair person. He's completely fair. He never does anything unjust. As he says, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu Name Dveshyosti Napriya. He says, Samoham, I'm equal. I don't have any hatred towards anyone. Who can say that except him? Can anyone say that they don't have any hatred towards anyone? No? Oh, therefore, he is in the position to set the laws because he is completely non-envious. The word dvesha means envy. He has no envy towards anyone because they're all his children. You can't expect a mother or a father to be envious towards some children of their own. They love all their children equally. Even if some of the children are slow and some of the children are fast or intelligent, still they love. You cannot say that a mother doesn't love a slow child as much. Sometimes you see. You may think it was going to be like that. You might think that the parents wouldn't appreciate a slow child, but actually they end up loving the slow child just as much. Maybe maybe even more, because they take so much care. And that child is so dependent. Anyway, our point is that Krishna, being the Supreme Father, non-envious Supreme Lord, he's the only one that can be moral. Because anyone else who tries to make a law will not be completely fair or just, will have some prejudice. Therefore, they can't make a law. Whatever law. Can you hear down there? Oh, we can also hear up here. So, it's Bhagavad Gita time. Krishna says, we read last night, he who studies this scripture worships me by his intelligence. So, going now to the first verse of the first chapter, observing the armies on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So Dhritarashtra is speaking to Sanjaya. Sanjaya is his secretary. He's a very, very saintly person, Sanjaya. And he says, after my sons and the sons of Pandu assembled in the place of pilgrimage at Kurukshetra, desiring to fight, what did they do? So, a little background. Dhritarashtra, actually Shantanu, he became the king. At one point, Shantanu was able to bring about great sense gratification for those whom he ruled, and especially anyone he touched. So therefore the name Shantanu. Whatever he touched especially would be very happy. And he was ruling his kingdom, but at one point there was a drought, and for a long time. And he asked his ministers what was the reason. And they said that because you have usurped the rule of your elder brother. He had an elder brother whose name was Devapi. And they said, it's not proper to assume a leadership position or perform an Agnihotra ceremony in the presence of one's older brother, one's senior. So Shantanu took that advice very seriously. He went to the forest. He found Devapi and he asked him to please come back and rule the kingdom. But Devapi had become contaminated. He had become fallen and he was blasphemous. So Shantanu went back and continued ruling. Then Indra was pleased and the drought was over. So Shantanu, he married Ganga, the Ganges, the personification of the Ganges. She was a very beautiful lady. But there was a condition to the marriage. Ganga agreed to become the wife of Shantanu, provided that he would never ask her why she was doing anything. She could do whatever she liked, and he would never ask. If he asked her, why are you doing that, then she would immediately go back to the heavenly planets. So Shantanu couldn't resist. She was such a beautiful damsel and also a very exalted personality, very spiritual. So they were married and they produced one son. And as soon as the son was produced, Ganges threw it into the river and died. You can imagine Shantanu was very upset, but he couldn't say anything, because if he asked her what she was doing, then she would leave. So this went on again and again. They had 7 sons, and she threw each one of them into the river and died. And he was getting more and more fed up. So finally the 8th son, he said, "Stop, stop. I'm going to take this son. Why are you killing all my sons?" She said, "Okay, I'm leaving now. You can take this son." And she went back to the heavenly planet. So he had this son, Bhishma. This was Bhishma Dev. There's a whole story who those 7 were. They were the Vasus, and he was also the 8th Vasu, and they had made an offense, so they would have to take birth on this planet, but they wouldn't have to stay for very long. They would just take birth and immediately go back to the heavenly planet. But Bhishma Dev, because he had, his offense was a little more severe, he had to stay longer on earth. That was a punishment. Actually, it's a punishment. Anyway, so Bhishma was born, and he was a great soul, great scholar. He's one of the Mahajans, and great Kshatriya also. Now, the problem was that Shantanu, he didn't have a wife now. And he was a big Kshatriya king, very full of passion. So it wasn't very suitable for him to not have a wife. So one day, he was taking a boat, and he happened to see the daughter of a fisherman. She was ranging the boat, and she was very, very beautiful. And so he actually he wanted to marry her. And so he asked the king, he asked the fisherman for the hand of his daughter. And the fisherman said, I would be very honored to, his daughter's name was Satyavati. Said, I would be very honored to give my daughter to you, but there's some conditions. The condition would be that her son would become the next king. And Shantanu said, I cannot do that because I already have another son, older son. So then he said, all right, so you cannot marry my daughter then. So the king was disturbed, but he tried not to let it be known to others. He didn't tell anyone. But Bhishma could tell that his father was disturbed, and he asked one of the very intelligent ministers, and that minister could understand the king's mind, and he said, this is the position. So Bhishma Dev took it upon himself to go to the fisherman, and he said, why don't you give your daughter to my father? He wants to marry her. Fisherman said, yes, as long as the son of my daughter becomes the king, then I'm happy to do that. And Bhishma said, okay, I promise that your grandson will become the next king, and I won't take the throne. But then the fisherman said, that's very good that you're offering that, and I know that your word is true, and I don't doubt it, but the problem is that you may have sons, and they may be very powerful, and they may defeat my grandson. So I'm afraid of that. So Bhishma Dev said, okay, then I take the vow that I will not marry, so there'll be no grandson, there'll be no sons. You don't have to worry. And I will also give protection to your grandson. So when he made that vow, the flowers came down and from the heavens, and they said, Bhishma. The heavens, the demigods all resounded. His name is Bhishma, which means awesome. This awesome vow that he has taken. Because for a Kshatriya to take such a vow is unheard of. For his whole life, he was just a young man. But he took a vow of celibacy. So Shantanu married Satyavati and had two sons. The first son's name was Chitrangada, and the second son was Vichitivirya. And the first son, Chitrangada, he happened to get into a fight at the river with another Gandharva named the same Chitrangada, and they got into a fight over the name. The Gandharva was there. Gandharvas are from higher planets. And he said, "So what is your name?" He said, "My name is Chitrangada." "What is your name?" "My name is also Chitrangada. There can't be two Chitrangadas here." So the king, he said, "Well, this is my, I'm the ruler here." So he got in a fight with the Gandharva, and the Gandharva killed him. So that was the end of Chitrangada. So then the next son, he was given the kingdom, but he was still young when his elder brother died. So Bhishma Dev had to kind of rule, had to rule the world. Also Shantanu passed away. So now the kingdom was being, the world was being ruled by Bhishma Dev on behalf of Vichitivirya. And Bhishma Dev went and there was a Swayamvara for three beautiful princesses, Amba, Ambalika, and what was it? Ambika, yes, three daughters of a king. And so at that Swayamvara ceremony, Bhishma Dev went there and stole all three, kidnapped all three of the princesses and rode away. And they tried to stop him, the other Kshatriyas, and he defeated everyone. And they thought that Bhishma Dev was giving up his vow of celibacy. Everyone was making comments. He took this vow. Look, now he's taking off the three beautiful princesses. We didn't think he could keep it anyway. But he wasn't. Actually, he brought all three princesses back to his younger brother, Vichitivirya. But one of them had already vowed or given herself to Shalva. She had already promised to marry Shalva. So she told Bhishma Dev, and Bhishma Dev said, "Oh, I didn't know that. All right, you go back and marry Shalva." So she went back, but Shalva said, "I'm not going to even touch you. You've been touched by another man. I can't marry you." So then she came back and told Bhishma to marry her, but Bhishma wouldn't marry her. So she was upset. She was furious at Bhishma. So she decided that she was going to kill Bhishma somehow or other. That's another story. But the two princesses that remained, now they became the wives of Vichitivirya. But Vichitivirya, these girls were so beautiful that he just became captivated by their beauty. And he couldn't tear himself away from these ladies. And he died of overindulgence or consumption or heart attack at a young age. So now again, the world had no king. So Bhishma was again taking the ruling position, but he didn't want to rule because it wasn't his position. So Satyavati, his stepmother, said, "All right, why don't you give these two princesses, the wives of Vichitivirya, give them sons so we can rule the kingdom?" He said, "No, I cannot. I took a vow of celibacy." And she said, "No, you should do it." And even Parashuram, the incarnation of the Lord, was induced. Actually, that was it. Parashuram tried, because Amba, that one of the princesses, she went to Parashuram, told the story, "Would you please force Bhishma Dev to marry me?" And so Parashuram said, "Yes, you have to marry her, Bhishma." Bhishma Dev said, "No." And there was a fight between Parashuram and Bhishma was victorious. So Parashuram said, "All right, you don't have to marry her." He didn't kill him, but he agreed that you're such a great warrior that you don't have to. So they tried to get Bhishma Dev to marry the two, or not marry them, but at least to produce a child, because in that age, in the Dwapara Yuga, it was allowed for a brother to impregnate his brother's wife if he was unable to beget a son. If the husband was unable to beget a son, his brother could give a son. That was legal. It's not legal in this age. In this age, it is said that Ashvamedham Gavalambam Sanyasya Palapaitrukam Devarena Sutotputim Kalo Pancha Vivarjaya. So that Devarena Sutot Supati means to him, a brother impregnates his sister-in-law. That was allowed, but it's not allowed in this age. It's forbidden in this age. So Satyavati tried to induce Bhishma, but he wouldn't agree. So then she said, well, I have another son. And no one knew about this son. They said, what? You have another son? Because formerly, when she was a maiden, she had another son, and that son was Vyasadeva. So Vyasadeva was requested to give children to these maidens to carry on the dynasty. And those three children that he produced were Dhritarashtra first, Pandu second, and Vidura third. So, thank you very much. Bhagavad Gita as it is, ki jai.